Chema. So we just dwell a little bit before we go to the next chapter. We dwell a little bit on the famous rope snake illusion. But just to put things in perspective, because in India we have too many answers, so we have forgotten to question. So we take all these answers as true, and then there is discussion between the different schools of thought. But what really is the question? The question is, when we see this world, experience it with our consciousness, we experience it as a world where, or let's put in one word, an imperfect world. Let's put it like that. So this is where the quest starts. If we don't have the question that this is an imperfect world and it should become perfect, then there is no issue. The snake is perfectly satisfied with the world as it is. It has no philosophy. It doesn't need one. The monkey is perfectly satisfied with his monkey life. And so too, humanity for a long time, it is satisfied with life as it is. And the mother would say, don't disturb them. If one is happy in the prison, why you want to disturb? So now what has happened is, because there is plenty, and so there are people who are not really seeking, wanting, and or having any quest or aspiration. When they randomly catch some sentences here and there, then they start raising all kinds of meaningless objections, or they pass judgments without really understanding where does the problem begin. I might as well say, looking at a complex algebra equation, that it is gibberish. I don't have. So first we should be clear, what is the problem? So the problem is, we experience a world which is imperfect, and we feel it is imperfect because we carry within us an aspiration for perfection. This is a baseline fact. Now, what that perfection means, it may mean different things to different people, but we carry inherent, at least humanity, beyond a certain point of evolution, does have the urge that world should be perfect, and it doesn't experience that perfection, so it raises the question. So there are different answers. One answer, classically, when it goes to science, he says the world is as it is. Why it is, that's not what should be our inquiry, and we don't have an answer about the why. Why it is imperfect has no meaning. We can tell you how it runs, and based on that you can make life perfect. So it promised and continued. So life started becoming perfect. Fans, light, air condition, geysers. But people continued to experience pain, suffering of various kinds. They continue to fight. So again people say, You promised us that life will become beautiful. So science says, well, this is my limit. Right now they have gone to the AI. That's what we can do. We can make a perfectly serviceable person at the service of your desires and ego. They don't even care with desire or ego. And that's what our idea of making life perfect is. But man can never be satisfied with it. As he says in one of his poems, Sri Aurobindo says, there is a need within the soul of man, the splendors of the surface never sate. For life and mind and their glory and debate are the slow prelude of a vaster theme, a preface to the epic supreme. So dissatisfaction is a boon given to us. Because then we seek. A too satisfied person never seeks. So sometimes difficult to say whether suffering is good or bad. Because at least one seeks. Life is imperfect. A person who is having plenty, he thinks he lives in the idea that everything is okay. So this is how the problem is stated. Science says, I don't know, I don't care. I can tell you that what the processes are, mechanisms are, and in that way we can improve upon it. What is at the background? It says there is an energy that it admits. It cannot, you know, deny it. And this energy throws itself in forms and names. By names I mean qualities and properties. So if you ask that what is the nature of this energy, it says mechanical, unconscious, inconscient energy. Period. That's it. But sir, my problem, that's your problem. Go to a psychiatrist, go to a philosopher, that's not my problem. Science says my hands are up. That's not my jurisdiction. Go to the philosopher. So we go to the philosopher. Sir, this is my problem. Science says I can provide all these things, but I cannot answer your question why life is imperfect. Now that's where we see schools of thought. Of all these schools, Buddha actually is the most practical and scientific. He says, see, why do you want to understand the problem? He says, because your life is imperfect, there is suffering, there is pain. Okay, I'll teach you a way to come out of it. Finished. Why it is, he doesn't touch upon it. That's why you see that Buddha doesn't talk about, you know, all these dynamics. He says there is, as long as you are engaged in any kind of desire, including desire for perfection, you are in trouble. So you have to go to is. That's it. And what is? Nothingness. If you go back, there is a play of energy. It would say even the experience of Brahman is again a percipient consciousness and something you are perceiving. You have to come out of that whole thing. The problem is nobody is there to congratulate that you are out of this suffering into nirvana, because it's supposed to be nothingness. Also, it doesn't answer the question. It bypasses it. And it answers to an individual, well, there are people who seek nirvana, it's perfectly fine. There is suffering, and if somebody can show us a way out of suffering, it's perfectly fine. But it doesn't answer the question, it completely bypasses it. So as an individual, you can come out of it. So Advaita Vedanta rose in reaction, because Buddhism became a Nastikvad, you know, atheistic thought. Don't talk about God, Brahman, Ishvara, and what is his relation. Because the moment you say God, Ishvara, you have said there is a perfect being. Then you have a problem that there is a perfect being and an imperfect world. Go beyond both. Even this experience is... And that's why we see many rational people with a limited reason and scientific minded, to them Buddhism appeals. That's why it took its roots in the Western world. These... None to pray, nobody to pray, you end up with ultimately annulling the whole thing. But naturally, the problem remains. there is everyday life, there is a whole world experiencing life in a certain way. So then comes the illusionism. So that's where we were talking about the snake rope illusion. So it says, no, there is a perfect one. So rope is a metaphor that actually there is no snake. There is a supreme reality or an ultimate reality. It doesn't use the word supreme reality. Pure Vedanta is about an ultimate reality. That ultimate reality is like a rope. It's there passive. Though, as I said, you know, it's not a perfect, because you can do many things with the rope. Huh? But okay, there is a rope lying there. But you are afraid because you are perceiving it as a snake. Why you are perceiving it as a snake? You are in ignorance. So what is the solution? Come out of ignorance and you will experience that there is no snake, there is nothing to fear, there is only the rope. So thought a disciple of Sri Ramakrishna. See, this is the problem. That's why in olden times, this knowledge was given only to the initiates. So a disciple of Sri Ramakrishna thought, oh wonderful, there is nothing to fear, all is Brahman. So he went out. And there was an elephant coming from the other side with a Mahavat sitting. And the Mahavat sees that this man is foolishly coming and he says, get out of the way. He says, you are ignorant. You are ignorant. You are seeing elephant and me. But no, that's not the truth. Truth is that this is Brahman. This is Brahman. There is nothing else but Brahman. By the time the elephant comes dangerously close and Mahat says, please, sir, we'll talk about it later. You please come out. He says, what can Brahman do to Brahman? And sure enough, the elephant throws the man. He gets badly hurt. And he comes to Sri Ramakrishna. He says, what kind of teaching you gave me? This is the result. Now, Sri Ramakrishna's answer is partial truth. He said, why didn't you listen to the Mahavat Brahman? If all is Brahman, then you should have listened to the Mahavat Brahman. Problem is, there are elephants which don't have a Mahavat, which don't have a man controlling. In life, you have so many things. So it doesn't answer the question. It gives you a way to navigate within this world of names and forms, that the one is manifesting himself in different ways. And there are terms for that. Visishta Dvaita, differentiated unity. But it doesn't answer why this has come into existence at all. But Sri Aurobindo has called it Vedanta, and there are different answers. We need not go into it. So rope snake illusion is basically, there is rope, which is basically for the reality. You have nothing to be afraid. You too are that. And you, once you know that you too are that, then there is nothing. You become one with that. There are different paths. We will not get into that. For an individual, this may be a solution. Not really a solution, but okay. But problem is that we are not just alone individuals. So what was the solution given that time? Yes, that is true. So all other people with whom you are connected, it is attachment. Get rid of all that. So see, Shankaracharya took sannyas. And there is the story where his mother told him that, don't take sannyas. She tried to hold him back. And so as the story goes, he goes in a pond and there is a rubber or whatever, a toy. I don't know how they created a toy crocodile, developed. But as a toy crocodile holding his leg, and he said, you allow me to take sannyas. You allowed me to take sannyas. Otherwise, he is going to eat me up anyways. So she doesn't say, okay, you are allowed to take sannyas. And then he leaves and then he goes because he takes a permission. But there are many other aspects in that whole metaphor which we can leave aside. Because the issue is not Shankaracharya or XYZ. Issue is this complete? Is this the complete account of things? Well, very evidently it is not. Is the solution of cutting away from everything and everyone, is this the ultimate answer? Or there is something we are missing? And here comes Sri Aurobindo. He says, yes, you are missing something. So first thing is, because in illusionistic Advaita, or illusionistic Vedanta, if you want to put it like that. So ultimately, even the individual is an illusion. So that's where we are reading eternal and the individual. Because individual is the one who is suffering, individual is forming relation, individual is having attachment. So there is all this problem of raga, dvesha, moha, and all these things. So the moment you discover Brahman, you say that you are there is no individual, there is only Brahman. So that's the end of the story. Many, many similes people give, like you're watching a movie and suddenly when you're feeling afraid, you're feeling happy, and when there is interval, there's only a blank screen. So the blank screen is Brahman. All that is okay. Who put me here? You came by your own choice. Now, I came by my own choice. There I am an individual. See, there are many, many problems with that. So those who want to be satisfied, it's okay. But it doesn't really answer. So Sri Aurobindo has used a term that his Vedanta, if we want to put it, there's only one letter where he says, is a realistic Advaita, not illusionistic. That's why he goes into details. He doesn't deny even the smallest experience. You see, when somebody went to mother who had lost her husband, so the mother doesn't tell her, the great verses of the Gita. There is na tato, na mato, na bhrata, na bandhu. She doesn't say any of these things. She looks at her and says, she spreads her arms to embrace. And then says, do you want to see him? Do you want to meet him? Maybe meet him. I've heard directly. So this story is true, but see or meet, I may be mistaken. So she is very surprised that what is this question mother has asked. She was in her 40s. and he had gone for a surgery and died. Mother had told him not to go for the surgery, went for it, died. So she is dumbstruck. She doesn't know what to answer. Then after a pause, she asked, "Mother, is he happy?" He says, "He is very happy with me. He is with me and he is very happy." "Okay, mother, if that be the case, I am not interested in meeting." See, it is a story which is a different story, though on the same lines, but with a new dimension altogether, as the story of Puranjan in Bhagavat Puran. We have not yet taken, we'll talk about. But this takes it to another level. So who is this he whom she says that he is with me and you can meet him? There is another person who had died and whom she kept with him because he went out of the body on the operation table. And you know, then there was, and mother used to tell him not to do this. But he, in operation table, so easy, he went out of the body. And then the body was cremated. Then he realized, oh my God. And he tried to rush, but the body was already cremated. He rushed to the mother. He said, "See, she had told him, said, don't worry, you stay in my atmosphere. And when the time is ready, I'll give you a new body." So what is this that is going into transmigration? Is it just the ego? Well, that's where the problem lies. And is there any reality to this individual who is other than just the ego self? And Sri Aurobindo brings in, yes, there is. We may say, use the word double individual within us. There is a surface individuality, which is the ego self formed by various aspects of nature. We get conditioned, we grow up in a certain, and to that extent, yes, moha, attachment, all this raga, dvesh develops in that ego self. But when this is gone, is Brahman the only reality, or there is a true individual who has entered into the play? Here comes Sri Aurobindo and the mother who say, yes, there is a true individual, the psychic being. Why he has entered the play? He has entered the play for the purpose of the play. What is the purpose of the play? Comes back to the original, ekoham bahushyam, raso vaisaha, to multiply delight. Now the problem at least is clear that we have entered, there is a reality, enduring reality of the individual. Last time we had read that where is the, what is the origin of the psychic being or the soul? It is in the supermind. It's not in any of these lower planes, just a reflection. So when that one wanted to become many, ekoham bahushyam, he created within himself, brought out multiple centers. So our true reality is there. And that's why how much ever we may drum about Mayavad and illusionism, mankind in general will never accept it as an ultimate doctrine except as a lip service. Because within us there is an urge for perfection. And this urge for perfection is the psychic entity within us. But what does the ego do? It is a limited creature. It's like that servant who was foolish, whom the king had employed. Okay, you take care when I'm sleeping at night that nobody disturbs. And he was given a sword because king took love on him. So he was sitting with a sword. I'll guard the king. And suddenly there was a makhi, a fly. And he has got a sword. He tries everything. And by the time he is fully enraged that I can't obey the king, I have to kill this fly. That's the only task he has given me. And then the fly sits on the king's chest, and we know what happened afterwards. It may sound like a story, but actually I have actually experienced with Champaklalji during afternoon for some time. That was one of the slots for seva. Then my job was with a fly, not thankfully not a sword, but there was a fly. Nowadays, you know, you can throw them away, shoo them away, and I was to sit, just sit. He would be sleeping. When he gets up and takes a juice, somebody else comes, I have to go away. So I'm sitting with this very alert, hyper vigilant, and I'm so vigilant that if I see, I have read the story still. I said, oh, chhati par thodi itna, I'm not such a fool that I'll, but I must make sure if I see a fly, I'm going to fly and kick it away. But no fly came. But the interesting part is Champaklalji made a remark. He said, he gave a message through someone, tell him to be relaxed. He said he is so tense that it is, you see, he is catching the vibrations. Tell him to be relaxed, that's all. He is just to sit there. So, then I realized, oh, what I thought as a job description was basically a grace to be in Sri Aurobindo's room and in that whole atmosphere and ambience was a grace. Like Dr. Sanyal was called, so he thought that I am supposed to do something in 1950, December. So he came and he started giving all kinds of advice. Mother said, I have not asked you to, you know, give any advice. So he says, why did you call me? You know, he has been called as a devotee that you come here, you, there is something going to happen. And he is one of those who saw the whole aura around Sri Aurobindo. So see, this is the difference. The ego mistranslates the real purpose. And then because it's very limited, it doesn't understand how to find this delight. So in ignorance, it tries this, that. Until one day, someone says, the fire that you are looking outside is what you carry within. Is that the end of the story? No. That's where Sri Aurobindo comes in. He says, still you cannot neglect why that experience of suffering one has to go through. So you see, Sri Aurobindo takes into account every little detail. As I said, that lady is suffering because she lost a husband. She is not saying there is no husband. Na tato, na mata, na bhrata, na bandhu. That's why actually if one asks me, there is none else who has so much compassion. Only he goes into detail. People often say, why has he written so long life divine? I say, infinite compassion. He doesn't want to leave anything question unanswered. Anything which remains like, you know, nebulous. Anything which remains like subject to. That's why he has gone into detail. But as Sri Aurobindo once said, when Nirodha asked him, sir, when you look at us, what a disciples of what a master. He says, as to the disciples, I agree. And then he passes it off by saying, kismat. But he came for that. So that's where if one wants complete answers, it's only with life divine. Savitri, of course, is complete, but that's another level. But if one is satisfied with these stock answers, then it is any of the Vedanta philosophy, depending on your predilection, Advaita, Dvaita Advaita, Visishta Advaita. Probably Visishta Advaita will come a little more close to it. It gives us a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And but complete answer is only with Sri Aurobindo. And we can see that. And it's not just the answer. There are practical aspects of it. So, for example, if there is the one reality and there are the many. So this many and that one, are they connected or they are just so? In traditional Vedanta, Maya, that's it. Don't ask where it came from. But it is the Shakti of the Lord who has gone into it. That's why in typical Vedanta, illusionist Vedanta, you have to get rid of Maya. And that's repercussions we are still facing. The discarding of woman as Maya. But Sri Aurobindo puts the picture correct that, well, she is Shakti who becomes for the purposes of creation, Vidyamayi and Avidyamayi. So that's, we have already spoken about it and there will be many occasions. So page 397. So you say, what are you saying? The one has become many. So you and me are one, but we are different. What does it mean? So he first, see how detailed. Page 397, fifth line from above. All things, even while different, are yet true. For practical purposes, plant, animal, man are different existences. Yet when we look deeper, we see that the plant is only an animal with an insufficient evolution of self-consciousness and dynamic force. See, the whole evolution aspect comes in if we admit Shakti, Maya and the play. Otherwise, there is no evolution. You don't have to talk about it. Man is, that's it. And there is a reality, that's it. Come out of it. Creation has no meaning at all. It's a snare actually. The animal is man in the making. Man himself is that animal and yet the something more of self-consciousness and dynamic power of consciousness that make him man. And yet again, he is the something more which is contained and repressed in his being as the potentiality of the divine. He is a God in the making. Now we understand the full story. Why we want the other person to be God? Basically because we are all God in the making. But this is a difficult task. So you expect maybe my husband, my wife, somebody will be God around me. But this aspiration to be God, to be divine in everything, is inbuilt within us. And just as within the animal, there is the little man. You look at monkey, you know, in many ways he looks like a man. Sometimes difficult to tell the difference. In children, that's why, you know, when children are very naughty, parents used to say, kya bandar ki tarah? Like a monkey or, because, you know, that the humble beginnings. And some people remain like that, you know, they are running all the time, somewhere or the other, and they are very happy that they are busy with something or the other. So this monkey growing into man, monkey carries within itself some beginnings of man. And the monkey carries, similarly, the animal carries within itself something of the plant, and plant carries within itself something of the animal. See, it grows, it reproduces, it wants to expand, and so on and so forth. There are plants which walk also, by the way. So, I mean, Google search. So there is the beginnings of, they don't think, but they act as if intelligently. So there is an intelligence which is hidden, which is working through form and name. In each of these, plant, animal, man, God, the eternal is there, containing and repressing himself, as it were, in order to make a certain statement of his being. So repressing himself becomes what the story of the Kena Upanishad. The entire eternal is there in a blade of grass. And if we know, if we have a method, if we have a means, this blade can become capable of being charged by the power of the eternal. This was the whole idea in olden times. We see people used to give some totem, taboo, and the totems, and they would say, you know, tona totka, you keep this little thing and it'll protect you. Now your faith charged it with that, that, you know, there is a truth inside it. And there is a truth inside it. Mind you, it's not like it's just a belief system. There is a truth inside and it gets activated by the power of faith. So when a person offers water in the river, doing a offering to the sun. So there are intelligent fools who say there is no sun here. There is sun there and this is water. How is it going? So the wiser man says that, well, because your vision is limited only to the outer. But to me, the sun is there, not only there in it, but as the presence of the divine. And when I offer it, it is reaching there because it's everywhere. See, in Lord Rama's story, how does he do tarpan for his father when he's told? He doesn't, there is no process there. He is going wherever he is going. So he offers it wherever the river is there, because river symbolizes flowing life. It's a flow of the current of life. It's not that you have to go to a particular. It means life is now flowing from one form to another. And you invoke the sun, who is the eternal truth. So all these things were inbuilt at one point of time, which are now lost. Which is okay. We have to get at the real truth behind it. It's not that we have to follow that ritual now. But there is a truth which we need to understand. each in the whole eternal concealed. Man himself who takes up all that went before him and transmute it into the term of manhood is the individual human being, and yet he is all mankind, the universal man acting in the individual as a human personality. He is all and yet he is himself and unique. So this is the difference between how God sees us and how we see God and others. So we see each of us as limited beings, we label stamp. Mother says, if I see like you, my child, if the divine even for one moment had the human vision, none of you will be able to stand. What does the divine see? He sees himself and sees the possibility. So what does he do? He doesn't say, you are a bad guy, you will be punished, rot in hell, God knows. He says, hey, you're myself, come up, you're my child. This mother's statement, my child, it may, you know, it's a mantra actually. Everywhere you see Mapati, my child, oh, mother's child, it can serve as a reminder, it can awaken us by that memory, oh, I'm mother's child. I'm not just some struggling creature. It changes the whole perspective. I'm mother's child. Wherever we go, somebody scares us. Hold on. I'm mother's child, and don't forget. It can give us infinite courage. So it's not just a way of saying my child out of some nice holy emotion. Yes, but there is the truth. She's addressing it to the eternal child within us. It can change our everyday life and dealing with the world. If we understand that, yes, I am her child, but otherwise one is also her child. If we forget that, that is the difference between Ravana, as this is there in one of the poems of Sri Aurobindo. Shri Krishna says, Ravana has survived and done all this. You know why? Because he knows the mantra, Aham Brahmasmi, I am God. But what he doesn't know, because of which he will fall, is that all is God, Tattvamasi. He doesn't know that. So when the ego catches it, it catches it wrongly. When the psychic being catches it, it becomes one with the divine. At the same time, it tells everyone, you too are the divine. It does not bend to the caprices of the play. It doesn't bend to become like, you know, another person. Then it will beat its purpose. But it awakens, invites, calls, because that is the original play. Okay. So a few lines below. Each thing is the absolute, all are that one. But in these three terms, always the absolute makes its statement of its developed self-existence. Three terms are the absolute, transcendent, cosmic, and the individual. We are not, because of the essential unity, compelled to say that all God's various action and workings are vain, worthless, unreal, phenomenal, illusory, and that the best and only rational or super-rational use we can make of our knowledge is to get away from them, dissolve our cosmic and individual existence into the essential thing, and get rid of all becoming as a futility forever. So it would literally mean that, well, since all is Brahman, my finger has no meaning. Eyes have no meaning. This is illusion. This is attachment. This is where the error lies. Because if he has become all these, then there is a truth that we are here to know. We have misread, misunderstood. All that is okay. But we cannot say that all this has no meaning, because it is yet the one who has become all this. Okay, so we can go to the next. Page 399. Because the absolute, page 399, some 10 lines from above. Because the absolute expresses itself through relativities, the secret of which we find it difficult to fathom, because to our limited view everything appears to be a purposeless play of oppositions and negatives or a mass of contradictions, we cannot conclude that our first limited view is right or that all is a vain delusion of the mind and has no reality. So that's where it is that we are hastily concluding, looking at the play now. It's like when you go for a movie, and in the first half, that's how movies used to be in olden times, I don't know, that in the first half, hero was getting beaten. In fact, till almost the last scene. So, if you see by interval, you'll say, horrible movie, let's get up and go. But if you wait, then comes the next half, where the villain gets a beating. Police comes always at the end. Why it comes at the end? Because otherwise how he will be a hero? Now, there is a truth in it, how I have understood. Why is the divine all the time not intervening, making life easy for us? Somebody once asked me that I prayed and, but my house now, the owner wants me to vacate. I have to look for another house. I believe mother will do everything. I said, you don't want to grow. You want to remain in kindergarten child. So, hero is hero because the police comes at the end. So there is in us a growth potential, a growth towards the divine and the divinity. Therefore, we have to go through challenges. Challenges make sense only if we have the evolutionary perspective. Then we don't divide life into slots of good and bad, but we divide life into different kind of challenges, and the challenges can come like in Arjuna, even to the sattvic sense that they are my own people and they are the ones who are opposing, who are taking this kingdom. What should I do? So challenges come in different levels in different ways. So we see then that there are three terms, next paragraph, of the one existence, transcendent, universal and individual, and that each of these always contains secretly or overtly the two others. So, there are several examples. We need not go into that. I mean, there are places where one actor assumes different, mono act, where he becomes different. There was a movie on that, Navrang. So, the same actor, hero, assumes different roles, wears a different face and form. So, why all this is? This is to, as I said, origin is to multiply delight. There is no other reason. So, multiplying delight, one may say, but so much we have to go through. Well, we all were privy to it. That question he will answer later. When God had a round table conference in the supramental state, shall we go in for this great game? Sir, what is again? Multiply delight. Okay. Stakes involved. Through self-loss, you will find yourself. Okay. Will you come? Yes, I'll come like you. From age to age I'll come. And in between also I'll be there. Okay, done. After that started the whole process. So we at that point of time said yes. And at the point of time when the whole culmination, we will say yes, thank God we did it. Because otherwise there was no individual at all. There is only that blank monotone of delight. So yes, we can say that multiplying of delight is invariably the divine mother comes in. That's why the Purusha is peace and the mother is delight. So you see, as long as a man doesn't marry, he is peaceful. But when he marries, let's have this, let's have that, let's have this, and his world begins to expand. A whole house becomes small. Now this is not vain. So after some time, the man becomes like a Purusha, inactive, comes home, he simply becomes the sanctioner. He learns over a period of time, I must sanction. I must say yes, otherwise there will be a problem. So he sanctions, he learns. But that sanction comes when you deep inside are one. When you know that your sanction has a meaning, this will be turned into something beautiful. And when the thing turns into something beautiful, the same person who used to come and sit in a little kutia on the floor finds it so nice that now there is a nice little couch on which I can sit and meditate, and multiplies the delight. So that the whole purpose. There is no other meaning. And it's meaning enough and joy enough. And that delight is the child. Our soul has been put forth out of that. So these are the three terms. On page 492, we'll just read last bit, 7-8 lines from above, 402, the last page of this chapter. Neither is the individual existence a subordinate circumstance in a divine play or leela. Parents want a child. Child is not by the way. Let him come. See what is going to happen. Whole life of parents is going to now turn topsy-turvy around that child. So it's not just a circumstance, a play which consists in a continual revolution through unending cycles of pleasure and suffering without any higher hope in the leela. Now you see, he's saying ki, it's not this. That's how it is explained. So he's saying it's not this. In the leela itself or any issue from it except the occasional escape of a few from time to time out of their bondage to this ignorance. He says that's giving a lie to God that he was foolish, that he decided to multiply. He should have stopped himself, controlled himself, said no. Because all drama starts from there. Divine and his Shakti, and then we are all chinna 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 little psychic beings, his children. So that's how the whole drama starts. We might be compelled to hold that ruthless and disastrous view of God's working. So beautiful. I love this adjective. If this is true, then God is really ruthless. Anybody with a little sanity will say, then all this mayavad, if this is true, if we were condemned into all this only to wake up to that reality, then that is, at least that was my problem. I cannot worship, love or find such a God who condemned us into this play only so that after so many lives, apparently waste, meaningless lives, okay, wake up. You had a bad dream, now wake up. I am the real. And there also you finish. It would be ruthless. Somebody who is creating this. But I don't know, people are satisfied with it. They also have a God up there in heaven and they do 5 times a day prayer. Now, if this is the truth, then obviously it's a ruthless God. Somebody actually said like that. And talking about UK, when someone asked a person from a certain religion, you will understand the religion that, you know, why does God give these orders to kill and all this? He says, because you have a wrong conception that God is compassionate. Challenged completely. He's not. He's strict. He wants life to be in a certain way. You have to only obey his command. I can imagine what is the difference between God and Hitler and the devotee and Hitler's army. This is the kind of God we have erected because we cannot understand the leela. Or we go back to karma. God made a beautiful world, you know what? Man spoilt it. Man is from ignorance. Sri Aurobindo is the one and only who says you cannot give the entire responsibility to man. He does play a little role, but to say that because was he consulted before creation? How can you hold him responsible? Now this is the one and only, and yet I am surprised that people are not able to see this. This is divine compassion. We might be compelled to hold that ruthless and disastrous view of God's workings if man had no power of self-transcendence or no power of transforming by self-knowledge the conditions of the play nearer and nearer to the truth of the divine delight. In that power lies the justification of individual existence. So this is where he says that if you discard the power as Maya, then there is nothing to justify. But if you understand that the power that has gone forth into the play is wiser than us, Pragya Prashruto Purano, and she has, this is a schooling process through which, and actually if you see, it is so well planned. For a long time, man lives in ignorance. He doesn't care about divine. He just gets little pleasure and pain. So that's also ignorance is like a shield. The questioning doesn't awaken. And the day questioning awakens, he begins to seek. And it is said that if you begin to aspire, then you have just, some people would say, three lives. Mother goes on to say, you have just one life around the corner. See, we are shielded. And ignorance is also a shield. That's how he puts in Savitri. That she is the dark mother in whose womb we have hid from too swift an awakening to world pain. We don't experience the cosmic pain. We experience a little bit of, I want to snatch it, I snatched it. Oh, I'm happy, I'm eating this. Oh, that is gone away. But there comes a time when we wake up to this huge pain. Now, once we wake up and aspiration wakes up. This is there in the mother's writings. She says if aspiration is wake up, usually it may be just one life. At most three lives. Even that we do not do. And she says that also. She says yes, even that, because aspiration also we have to aspire at least. She says, if you cannot, still there is grace. So that is the degree to which Sri Aurobindo and the mother have come close to us. Even if you cannot aspire, of course we should aspire to make it easier for them. But see, if once she takes sin, I want to put it like that. Once she takes sin, then grace works. What a beauty, what a delight, what a grace. So we'll come back to the next chapter, the divine and the undivine. 10 minutes break.